Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, I'm Grace Bonney, and you're listening to After the Jump. We're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And you can listen to us live every Monday afternoon at heritageradionetwork.com, or you can download the podcast at iTunes. I am very, very excited today because I have one of my favorite West Coast people in the whole world here. I am sitting with Meg Mateo Alasco. Thanks for being here, Meg.
Thanks for having me.
So Meg is the author of about 7 books now. I know you as sort of one of the most talented working moms around. You have written books.
That's really sweet.
You had a stationery line. You repped stationery at some point. You've done everything.
I've done a lot of things.
So I want to back it up first and introduce you to people and tell us how you got started, at least in terms of being an artist.
Oh, wow. That's kind of
Let's
a long story.
Let's go back really far.
Yeah, that's a really long story. You know, it's funny because up until about 5 or 6 years ago, I thought I was on this, you know, quest for trying to find like the one thing that I needed to do. And then I realized, you know, I started looking back at who I am and what I've been doing, and that, you know, just probably ever since high school, I've always been doing a lot of different things. And I think that that's just who I am. And I, you know, 5 years ago, I just decided, you know what, I'm going to embrace this. I am just going to do, you know, whatever it is that, like, wherever my heart takes me, basically. And so, you know, when I got started, really, was when I was in architecture school, actually. I was going to grad school for architecture. And I, like I said, I like doing many different things. I also had a business while I was going to grad school. And I probably was the only one in architecture grad school with a business. And everyone thought I was crazy then. But that was what made me happy. And what happened was that, you know, was kind of doing it, obviously, on the side. School was the main thing. And while everybody else, like after that first year, decided to do an internship, I decided, you know what, I'm going to put an ad in Martha Stewart, you know, and it was like the tiniest little ad. And, you know, this was what year was this? About 2001. There weren't very many other wedding invitation designers, and it literally blew up after this like tiny, tiny ad, you know, in the back, the marketplace.
Power of Martha Marketplace.
Exactly. That's
surprising to me. I always think like who actually reads all those things, but apparently
that's what
read
I
them.
Thought too. I mean, and at that time too, I have to say that the wedding industry is far different than what it is now. And I didn't really realize the power of it either. You know, I had like a couple $1,000s in my bank account, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to put this whole thing into this ad, and we'll see what happens. And you know, that ad pretty much made. I had to decide right then and there, you know, whether I was going to continue with school or do the business. And I decided to do the business. And literally right after I made that decision, I found out I was pregnant.
Just some small news.
Yeah. And I, at that point, you know, was literally growing a business and growing a child inside of me. And, you know, it was this thing. It was like both of them were like really big things happening. I was trying to figure out both of those things at the same time. And it was like a, you know, big learning process.
Well, I love that we're going there, because I really want to talk to you about being a working mom. I am not a working mom, but I have so many friends who at this age are, and I feel like it's this essential struggle that it's the one area I can't help people with in any way. And it really kills me because I don't know what it's like to try to balance those two things. And I have no idea how you do it, but you have just written a book called Mom Ink, which is
Yes. What,
the fourth in the Ink series? You've done Creative Ink, Craft Ink, Blog Ink, which will come out
next year.
Yeah. And Mom Ink, which just came out.
Yeah.
So that's a huge
part. And actually, Blog Ink is going to be authored by Joy Cho. And then Mom Ink is co-authored with Kat Seto. But yeah, it is like Mom Ink for me was a very personal thing too. It was really, you know, and all I have to say, all the books were very personal because, you know, I really feel like, you know, I want to help people figure out how to do this, because really making, you know, turning your passion into a business, it's really tough.
It's tough.
Yeah. And I learned that, I mean, with the wedding thing, like at that time too, there weren't any blogs. There wasn't a whole lot of resources out there for you to tell you what to do. So really I learned sort of the hard way, and I put all of that information into that book, Craft Inc. And again, too, with now with mom is like, you know, I've been a mom now for 9 years. I have two kids. And really putting in sort of what I've learned in those experiences, and also in addition to Kat's experiences, she's a mom of a 2-year-old. Putting it in there and really trying to help, you know, women figure out, well, how do you do the motherhood thing and the business thing? Because I think, you know, sort of the modern day motherhood is now about, you know, how can I spend more time with my kid and also have this like fulfilling career? And sometimes that equation ends up being is it equals starting your own business. Because really, I mean, how can you spend more time with your child? And really having a business is the one thing that does allow you that flexibility.
How do you think, I mean, you have a co-author with this book, Kat Cito. Yes. How do you think that you two approach that differently? Because of all the working moms I've met sort of have their own method for getting things done. Did you guys come to things with sort of being on the same page? Or do you think you have different approaches to how to make it work?
You know, I think we have a similar approach, I think, to making it work. And really, there's no formula. It's just, you know, I think every day brings a new set of challenges. And you really just have to, like, every day is like this prioritizing thing. And as the day goes on, it gets reprioritized because things start happening. Like, for example, you know, I'll be going along my day, and then all of a sudden my daughter calls me. She doesn't feel well at school. You know, and I had like, if I had meetings like lined up, then I have to now move everything around. And I think it's just, you just have to be able to learn to adapt to your environment, you know, not to your environment, but to what's happening, to the circumstances. And I think that's what Kat does too, because you really can't predict certain things happening. And literally too, in business, you can't really predict what's going on there either. You know, you think that, you know, you were supposed to have something going down today. You know, maybe your supplier doesn't deliver it on time. Things happen. And I think the ability to sort of roll with it, if you have that is like the one thing that's really important to be a mother in business.
How do you think you teach that to people? I think that's something that comes inherently to you. I think you and I have that in common, that is that I think both of us are people who kind of like see a problem, hit it head on, and just figure out a way to make it work. But right. I don't think everybody sort of has that built into them. How do you think that momming sort of helps people understand how to become more like that?
I mean, in terms of how Mom Inc. is going to help, and with that regard, I think it's sort of letting go of certain things. Learning how to say no to things. And it does get hard because when you become a mom, there becomes more things you have to say no to. There's things to say no to in the business realm, like projects that aren't good for you. And then with your kids, you know, there's like a bunch of things you know, people want to sign you up for. I'm always getting asked to volunteer. You know, they go, you know, people will be like, oh, I see you're really crafty at something, or, you know, hey, you know,
you must have a ton of time to do all
yeah,
of that.
Like, why don't you help us with the yearbook this year? And, you know, and part of me feels like I should do these things. God, I really should do these things for my kids because they would love it. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? If I do that, then I'm not spending time with them now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, technically, I'm doing it for them. Like, I'm doing these things for their school, but I'm not even with them at this point doing it. And so you do have to get into this phase where you are saying you have to say no to things. The other thing is to sort of the letting go of the guilt. And, you know, I think once you start saying no and letting go of guilt, then you can really get into that sort of making it work fit mode. Because those are the two things you have to do in order to get into that phase. And the guilt thing is a really huge thing.
Well, I think the guilt thing is such a huge hurdle because I'm glad you sort of, you're saying make it work. Because I remember I've been reading all these interviews with working moms because it's something that I get asked about a lot these days. And I don't know how to answer it. And I read somewhere someone who was talking about that it's not about finding balance. That using the word balance was actually a really bad word because it sort of suggested that there was this perfect place you could find
where
everything was in balance. But it was instead about always just trying to kind of roll with it and in trusting your gut and feeling like I haven't spent enough time with my kids or I haven't spent enough time with my business.
Exactly.
And just constantly kind of riding that wave and figuring it out.
And just for like listening to yourself.
Yeah. Right. There is no perfect balance place. And I think
I would say it's like a balancing act more than it's balance. Yeah. But yeah. And I have that feeling about the word balance too, because it does imply that, you know, it's just like this thing of, you know, homeostasis, where everyone, you know, it's like perfect equilibrium, everything's working, everyone's, you know, being satisfied in this equal way. And really, that's just not happening, especially if you're, you know, you have a business and you are a mom. It's just, you know, you're going to be pulled in like 50 million directions, and you're just never going to feel that way.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, we're both people who've been involved with blogs. And I think that blogs actually have played a really interesting part in sort of putting out an image that maybe is not the most realistic one.
Oh,
and,
no.
And I think that's just a part of people putting their best foot forward online.
Oh, it's natural. It's a natural thing to want to show your best side.
Exactly. And yeah. You want to show like the three-tiered cake that you made for your child's birthday party. Yeah. And everyone assumes you must have time to do that all the time. Mm-hmm. But no one ever shows the bad stuff. And I mean, how do you see that affecting sort of modern working moms? Because I don't think people necessarily had that sort of shoved in their face on a daily basis the way they do now.
I definitely think it makes, you know, modern day motherhood harder. I mean, you do feel like, especially if you're a creative person, because then it's like, oh, well, you're creative. Well, clearly you're going to make your child's birthday a production.
You're going to make ombre streamers for every party.
Right. it does get hard. I mean, you do get that pressure. You already get the pressure because when you talk to other moms, they're telling you, you know, hey, my kid's in 7 different activities. What's your kid doing? And you start to feel it already then. And then, you know, you get it. And, you know, when you start to see a blog where they're like, God, these ladies have it all together. Look at them. They, you know, their house is perfect. Their kids look so well behaved. And not only that, they look like they're straight out of a catalog, you know? And it does make you start to feel like it's that feeling of inadequacy. Like, mm-hmm. How are they doing it, you know, and putting it online?
Mm-hmm.
And they've got it all together. And I do think when you do look at these blogs, you do have to realize that this is just like a morsel of their life. It is them putting their best foot forward. They're, you know, sort of what's happening outside of the frame of this picture is probably chaos, which is like, you know, which is what happens when you do photo shoots. Like, outside of that frame is literally chaos.
It's so true.
Yeah. And so you have to see it you have to think about it with the, you know, that those lens on, you know what I mean?
I think that's where the importance of talking to people in person comes in. Mm-hmm. It's something that I think has been really important to me for the last few years, is to meet with women and talk to them in person, because you sort of like the blog mask falls off, and you see how people really dress in real life, how they really talk, whether or not they actually look tired. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, people can take really great photographs of themselves to put on their blogs and look completely different. And I think it's really important to meet those people in person and say, oh, I can completely relate to them. They don't have like a glow around them at all times.
I think people have to realize too that sometimes what's happening on blogs is this is a persona that mm-hmm. they're, this is not their complete self.
Exactly. I mean, how does that play into your life and the working moms that you know? I mean, are there meetup groups that you go to, or do you have sort of friend groups that you rely on for that sort of one-on-one feedback?
I do have I don't have meetups. It actually seems like it would be really good. Well, like Kat and I, we actually started a book club together. And so we have that. And that's not actually just, it's actually a mix of like women through, you know, there's like single women in there and unmarried. It's just like a big mix. And it's part book club and part sort of a women's group for, you know, for help us. You know, everyone's got like a different project, and we talk about our projects. And everyone's like in a different thing. Like, not everyone's doing like, you know, something crafty and creative. Yeah. So it's kind of nice. We all get together. We talk about a book. Maybe like
for a few minutes.
Yeah, a few tiny minutes, if we actually even finish. Like, last book I didn't even really read. And then we talk about our projects and we talk about our life. And so that's, I think, has been really like, that it's a pretty new thing, but it's really like a great thing for, you know, it's support.
It's an important outlet. What other outlets do you have that are fun and non-work related? I feel like I never hear working moms talk about having hobbies or fun things. Oh, and I hope that there are some.
I don't even think I have.
I think that means that's a no.
Silence.
No hobbies.
Well, Dad and I have like mom brain right now. I'm like, I can't remember what I did yesterday. So I'm like, what was I doing?
Well, you do have another full-time job. We're going to talk about that after the break. We're not quite there yet, but I do want to talk about Anthology. Yeah. But in terms of the book, so tell us a little bit about, you're doing like a mini book tour.
Mini book tour, yeah. Okay. We are going, we just had our book launch, which is in Emeryville in the Bay Area. And I'm here today in New York. And we're having a book event with a Q&A. And we're going to have one in LA in June, on June 22nd.
What are some of the common questions you get asked? I'm dying to know what moms are asking you. And please tell me there are some like fun, embarrassing, weird questions.
Well, we actually didn't have a Q&A at the last one. So it's actually going to be at this one. So I mean, I haven't fielded any questions yet. But, you know, we do get, like, when I do see other, you know, moms who are trying, you know, start a business, we do get a lot of, you know, it's the same questions, which is really, I mean, like, how do you do it all? And, you know, for me, that question kind of, I don't really know how to answer that. It's like, you just do it. And I'm not even sure I'm doing it really, really well. But I'm doing it, and yeah. I'm trying to do it to the best of my ability. Again, there, you know, it's sort of what you see on the outside, because mm-hmm. it looks like, you know, everything's, you know, if you look at what's happening to me online or on Twitter or whatever, it's like, well, it looks like you've got it all under control. And it's, again, it's because I'm, you know, I'm not going to tell you, like, you know, all, you know, like, my kid's having a meltdown right now, and
yeah.
things are going wrong here. You know, last week my InDesign file got corrupted. I'm not going to tell you. I'm telling you right now, but you know,
but it's all coming out,
yeah. Man. You know, things like that don't get shown, and I think it does get people start to ask you that, like, well, clearly there's, you know, you have this formula for figuring everything out, but there isn't. And it'll be interesting to see what types of questions people ask yeah. us.
Well, I'm hoping your book tour will spawn people, or at least encourage people in the cities that you're visiting, to start their own sort of in-person groups. I think that's where things mm-hmm. sort of get real, and you realize the people that seem perfect online aren't perfect at all.
Right.
But in a good way, not yeah. that they're all secretly terrible people, but that they're great people who don't always dress
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I think you do. Like, it's so great to see sort of that authentic and honest side to people, because it is hard to say. It's hard to say those things online, because you mm-hmm. don't know what response you're going to get. And I think, and everything's so pretty online right now. If nobody wants to dirty it up, you know?
I think it needs to be dirtied up.
Yeah, a little
I think
bit.
I think we're all getting that itchy feeling of, like, people need to be more real. We have to take a break in a second. But when we come back, I want to talk about Anthology, and I want to talk really quickly about Easy from Creature Comforts. I'm Afraid to Tell You series of people keeping it real by talking online. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about Anthology.
And sustainable seafood at Whole Foods Market. On April 22nd, Earth Day 2012, we'll be eliminating all red-rated species of wild-caught fish and seafood from our stores across the country. It's our way of supporting our oceans and helping to reverse trends in overfishing. Learn more at blueoceaninstitute.org and wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm speaking with Meg Mateo Alasco, author, artist, working mom extraordinaire. And before the break, we were talking about being a working mom, and you have so many irons in the fire right now. And one of my favorite irons is Anthology Magazine, and you are the creative director. So tell us a little bit about that. I'm just always so fascinated by people's choices to go back into print in a time when it's so difficult to make print work.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny, because when we thought about starting this magazine, when we were telling people that we were starting a magazine, in our minds, it was obvious, you know, when we say magazine, we meant print. We didn't think we had to, like, preface it and say, like, you know, print magazine. But apparently we did have to do that, because everyone that we told, I think they assumed that we were talking about it being an
blog.
An online magazine. Because clearly at that point, this was at the end of 2009, you know, there were so many magazines folding. I could see why people were thinking that we were crazy when we were, like, clarifying, like, no, actually, we meant print. and, you know, for us, it's like, well, you know, yes, it's crazy, but, you know, that's the whole point. If people did things for sort of purely calculated reasons, you know, the world would be a really boring place, right? And so I think for us, that gave us a lot of motivation. You know, like, you know what, we're kind of going against the grain here, and we feel like we had this challenge to rise up to, and I think that gave us a lot of motivation for starting it.
So tell me about the startup process. I think a lot of people have no idea how difficult it is to actually do something in print. It's so different than online. I mean, sounds a little obvious now saying that out loud, but until we did the newspaper, I had no idea how difficult it was to actually do the print process. So tell me a little bit about like how you found the team, the contributors, how did all of that come together?
Let's see. You know, when we started, we really like, you know, I have both Onman and I have like a background in publishing, and it's, I mean, it's not the most robust background here. Like my background was in, you know, I have done book design. I've written books. That's it. Onman writes a column for the newspaper, the San Francisco Chronicle. And that's basically what we had to run with. And, you know, we met with this other woman who had started an independent magazine, and we kind of got some advice from her. But we didn't really, like, we didn't walk away with anything solid either, because it just sounded like, you know what, do your research and figure it out, which is what we ended up doing. We did our research, and we ended up figuring everything out. The good thing is, too, that we, you know, prior to getting into it, we did have a lot of connections. Onman knew a lot of writers. I knew a lot of photographers. I had worked with a lot of photographers on other projects, and those photographers came on board right away with the magazine. But it was hard getting other contributors like right off the bat, because we didn't have anything to show them.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't, and we have to say, like, you know, there were some photographers that did turn us down, and stylists and things, because it's like, you know, you can't say like, yeah, this thing, we're making this thing, it's going to be awesome. You know, people need to see it to see that it is. And so, you know, sort of with the limited, and I kind of like working with limited resources, because it really makes you, you know, when you're scrappy, you make things happen.
Exactly.
And that's what we did. We said, okay, well, these are the resources we have. Let's go with it. And, you know, thankfully we were working with a lot of talented people.
You definitely are. So in terms of how you're publishing quarterly now, right?
Quarterly.
Tell us a little bit about, I mean, I guess what the printing process is like, but also want to know about, actually just back up a little bit. I want to know what the mission statement of Anthology is, because I think that you guys actually have a very interesting aesthetic and voice that a lot of, whether they're online or print magazines, don't have right now. And I think that's what sets you guys apart. So clearly it's a lifestyle sort of home publication, but what do you think makes Anthology different?
Well, you know, when we came together for this magazine, you know, we did have to ask ourselves, like, well, why are we doing this? And I think anyone who starts anything should ask themselves why you?
I think most people don't do that before they start projects.
Yeah. and so that's what we did, because we're like, okay, who are we? We're Meg and Onman, and why does anyone need to see our magazine? So we thought about that. We're like, okay, well, what can we do? What can we do that hasn't been done before, that hasn't been previously done or isn't being currently done? How can we bring a new experience to an interiors magazine? So I remember in that one of our first meetings when we got together, I said, you know, I think we said, well, let's bring together, why don't we just talk about every magazine that we, you know, bring together samples and talk about every magazine, whether or not it relates to interiors. Let's bring it all together and let's see what we got here, what we like, what we don't like. And, you know, we obviously brought things like Domino, mm-hmm. you know, which we loved for, you know, there's like a visual and style inspiration. We also brought things like Vanity Fair and New York Magazine, which we loved for the stories. And so what we ended up, you know, what dawned on us at that point was like, why don't we merge these two experiences? Why don't we bring something with, you know, for visual inspiration and merge it with something with stories? Because we love stories, you know, on Men and I, like, we, you know, we talk about this all the time. We're like, we're so curious. So we always ask a lot of questions, maybe too many questions sometimes. And make that, let's put together that experience. Let's have, and so that's where Anthology came about, the name as well, is that we wanted this to be a collection of stories about culture, interiors, lifestyle, travel.
That's what I love so much about the magazine, is I think storytelling is really sort of missing from design right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that most people don't want to read long stories. They're so, I mean, I'm one of the reasons why people want these really short snippets of like a picture, a little bit of information, and then it's done. And that's mm-hmm. how I talk, and that's fine. But I also,
maybe what's happening with a blog, it's different. The way that people digest online media.
Exactly. But I want to read something in a magazine. I want to know the people. I want to know interesting things. And I think that's missing from a lot of magazines. Mm-hmm. And I think that was what struck me from the first time I read Anthology, was like, there's substance here. I'm getting to know the people behind something, not mm-hmm. just like the cute shirt she's wearing. I'm also knowing about this person's background.
Yeah, and that's definitely what we didn't want it to be. I mean, there's plenty of magazines and they do this really well, where they're like, here's this look, this is how to steal a look. And we didn't really want people to do that. We wanted people to learn about other people and maybe make a connection there and say, well, you know, hey, I'm doing that too, or hey, I grew up that way as well. and may, or even see a connection in that, in the interiors, or like sort of the reasoning behind the way that they're doing the interiors, and really make, do something for themselves on their own. Just sort of take that, that take that story as sort of just like, you know, a jumping point onto something for something from themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the printing. I'm really fascinated by like the printing and distribution process for things like this, because it's, if for anybody who's never worked on a print project, it's so hard to do things like that. And I think you guys, you sell directly anthology, but you also are selling through stores. How did you set that up, and how did you decide like what would be the best and most authentic way to get anthology out there?
I think for, you know, when we started, we were very well aware like why other magazines were falling, and it was because it was an advertising based venture, and for us we didn't really want to get into that. We said, you know, this is going to be a reader based thing. You know, the money that we get for the magazine, it's going to pay for the publication, it's going to pay for the talent that goes into it. And it, which is something you don't, that's why, you know, you don't see that in like sort of these like larger magazines. I mean, that's why their subscriptions are so cheap. The advertising's basically paying for everything else. We didn't want that to happen. So, you know, in terms of what, how this was going to affect distribution and everything, obviously the reason why like the advertising based magazines have such a wide, they cast a really wide net in order to get the advertising. And so for us, like, we're like, we don't need to do that. We don't need to cast that wide net. What we really want to do is really like maintain like a loyal reader base. And for us, and it's just to kind of keep it also, like, we really love independent stores and independent bookstores, and we really want to put, that's where we want the magazine to be. And we felt like that was much more, like, in line with who we are, in line with our brand. So that's what we're continuing to do now. We don't really feel like we really need to cast that wide net yet. It, you know, maybe at some point we will, but right now it's, we like how small it is, and we like selling directly to people.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I think you guys have sort of, I don't think merchandising is the right word for that, but I think that you've really sort of integrated the magazine into places that make sense for somebody to spend money like that on a publication, because I think people are frankly kind of spoiled right now by blogs that are all free. Nobody pays for anything.
Yeah.
And so when you have to sit down and buy a book or buy a magazine, I think people forget why you're paying what you have to pay. And I think something like that,
people they forget.
Completely forget, or they just go off the walls and complain about like, you want me to spend $15 on this. And if you broke it down and realized how little $15 actually contributes towards like the entire funding of a publication.
Plus, I mean, I think if you've been used to buying magazines from these larger publishing houses, you know, it's like $15 for a year, and then all of a sudden you're paying here like $12 for one issue.
Or it's the result of a print run that's huge. And just the other day I was in a Barnes & Noble and I hadn't bought a copy of Monocle in forever. Mm-hmm. And I think it was $12. And I was shocked because that sucker was like an inch and a half tall. And I just kept thinking, how is this $12 in like Kinfolk, which is like, you know, much thinner, is like $20. And then I was trying to think, well, everything is done independently and done entirely on its own, and that makes a big difference. And so
and you have to look at like also like, you know, the quality of the paper that goes into it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why you guys and a lot of other sort of print magazines are thinking about integrating their publications into places that you wouldn't normally find them, like not just bookstores and magazine stores, but home stores and lifestyle shops, where sort of like-minded people aren't afraid to spend a little bit more money on a print publication. So yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think for us too, we, you know, in terms of distribution, you were asking about that. Thankfully, a lot of people have just sort of been coming to us. We're such a small, it's just Unmin and I, essentially. And then we have like, you know, a small staff of other four people who don't even do it for us full time, or don't work for us full time. And, you know, thankfully, there have been a lot of people who have learned about the magazine and have come to us and have now and carry the magazine. And we're really happy. So we actually haven't done a whole lot sort of in distribution outreach.
But that really speaks to the strength of the publication. I think you guys are popping up in different places because people are interested in seeking out the magazine and putting it in their store. You don't really have to do a lot of legwork.
The funny thing, too, because one of and sort of the largest store that carries our magazine is Anthropology. And the funny thing about that is, I mean, they came to us as well. And I remember when we started the magazine, you know, I think Unmin was asking me like, well, you know, if this were to be in sort of a larger store, which store do you think it should be in? This is like literally like our first meeting. And I said, you know what? If Anthropology carried magazines, and they didn't at the time, I said, you know what? I think this would fit in their store. And then we kind of laughed because we're like, they're not going to pick it up. Because we just, you know, they just like, we just didn't imagine them like carrying a magazine. And so we kind of like tucked that idea behind. And then like they called us like, I think after the first issue. So we thought it was funny that they came, you know, like, wow, they're really going to pick up a magazine. That's really great. And now they have like a whole bunch.
And now they can barely keep it in stock. When I was in Portland last summer, I remember I went to, I was in some store on William Street, and I asked, there was one copy of Anthology in there, and I was going to pick it up, and the store owner was like, wait, can you just not get that one yet? Because I knew her, and she was like, I can just give you like my copy. She was like, I don't want to get it out because I don't have any more copies left. Oh. And it made me so happy, and I was just like, you know, high-fiving you virtually for how well that's done. And she was like, we can't keep these in stock. Like, it's just going because there are so few magazines of substance right now. So that kind of gets me to my next question is, where do you really see like design and lifestyle and print going? Because I feel like there was a period last year where everyone and their brother and sister started a print magazine, and then it all kind of disappeared. And there are a couple of you that are still around that are doing really well. Where do you think that design is going to live on in print? Or will it?
I think it's going to continue to live in print. I mean, this is the reason why we started it. And in terms of design living, I mean, for us, the way that we portray design is a little bit different than how some other lifestyle magazines do it. What we're trying to do is we're trying to really portray people sort of how, you know, how they live. And like, we don't truck in props at all. You know, and I think it gets hard too, because we work with stylists who do normally do that, and so they get a little confused. They're like, wait, what? Like, and we also tell them too, like, if let's say for flowers, like, cause that's like maybe the one thing where it's flowers and fruit, you're like, yes, you can bring that.
Flowers and fruit.
Fruit and foliage, you can bring that. But I tell them too, like, if the owner don't like it, don't put it in, because we really, like, people get really particular about flowers. You're like, you know, there's some things they like and then don't like. So we do want to keep it authentic in that sense. You know, we've also done things where, you know what, take pictures of things that are broken. It's okay.
Okay. It happens.
Yeah. I remember I think it was like our second issue, we had this picture of a sink, and, you know, the faucet was broken. And we said, no, we're going to run that pic, because that's really how their house is. So there's a sort of this comfort level that we need to get from the homeowners too, because they're like, you know, because they want to show their best. They don't want to show a broken faucet sometimes. And some people are like on board with that. And some, you know, people are like, no, please don't show that. Cause it, you know, so we do accommodate, you know, the people that we're telling the story about, but at the same time, we are trying to show sort of the realness of it as well as best we can.
I love that. That's why I love you, Mikhail. I think you've been keeping it real as long as I've known you, and I think you do that in every single one of your projects. And we have to wrap it up for today, so I'm so sad to say goodbye.
Oh,
but
no.
I'm so happy about Mom Inc. And anyone listening, whether you're a working mom or you hope to be a working mom one day, it's a must buy. All of your Inc. series are a must buy, and as well as Anthology. So thank you for making things seem more relatable and, you know, more real. I think that's really important in this industry. And I think you've been someone who's been a very, very big supporter and celebrator of having real things be creative and inspiring. And you do that really, really well.
Thanks, Grace.
So we'll see you later. Thanks for listening. And you can visit anthologymag.com.
That's right.
Anthologymag.com. And you can pick up Mom Inc. in bookstores everywhere. Thanks for talking to us, Meg.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.